Wait, what do you mean Mark Marquez is running back towards the pit lane? Welcome back to Motorsport 101. In tribute to Texans and spaghetti westerns, we had the good, the bad, and the ugly, and that was just Mark Marquez. Welcome to episode 573 of Motorsport 101. It's still fuck Konami, despite it being 573. Hi, everybody. I'm Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever. And just the one episode this week as MotoGP came home. It's their second home if Liberty Media gets the purchase put through. It's the Grand Prix of the Americas. Round three, and we got the full Mark Marquez experience. The good, the bad, the everything in between. It really was Mark's weekend, until it very suddenly wasn't at the end. Because now we have Pecco Bagnaia on the board for the season, and our new world championship leader is a Marquez on a blue bike, and it's not Mark. Who'd afford it? We'll discuss all that and more over the next 45 minutes or so. But first, we go around the table. First up, Mr. RJ O'Connell, how was your week off?
My week off in Sonoma was spent. It was pretty good. GT World Challenge America season started. That's where I was. I got to make sure I had one glass of Sonoma County wine while I was there. It was pretty sick. I'm glad to be back, but I'm back on the road Thursday for some street race near Los Angeles. I hear it's a pretty big deal. I've heard they have 50 of them this time out.
50 of them, you hear?
Yeah.
Look at that, Baker.
I hear it's pretty long down there at that beach.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That'll be fun. Well, the long way, as Ghost Raptor says in the chat, the long way, etc. Also joining us from the Owl Bikes fraternity, Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, Cam.
Our bikes is unfortunately on hiatus for some of us here. Hopefully a short hiatus while I try to figure out a 6-year financing plan to get Mario Kart World.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The Nintendo Switch 2 announcement was today. You want to tell them how much those games cost?
You know, Mario Kart Burnout Paradise might have been the greatest pitch I've ever heard. Unfortunately, it was also the harbinger of the $80 game.
$80 for the digital release of a brand new video game. Bump it up to $90 if you want the physical copy. Video games are in such a great place right now. I just love that this is what has become of our favorite childhood hobby.
It's even more expensive if you convert it from UK currency, because it's going to be 75 quid for a physical copy here in the UK with the stronger currency. I love it here. It's fantastic. It really is. Any interest I had in a Switch 2 died right there and then when I found out having to buy a cartridge is going to cost me 75 of my freedom pounds. I hate it here. Nintendo, get a fucking clue. Honestly. Racing games are wonderful, as Raptor says in the chat. I'm going back to the PS2 now. Good idea.
Well, yeah, you can experience our bikes with Taurus Trophy in 1080i.
I would have settled for MotoGP 4, quite frankly. Good game on the PS2 era, but, I'll
take that.
Yeah, strong Namco title. Good drift. You can power slide the rear of bikes. It makes you feel satisfied and jingly inside. It's great. But, we'll be talking all about the Mark Marquez experience, the start scene all around the world, so much so that the beloved Lightbox was intercepted by a flying man in a red suit. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the fact that Mark didn't win this race and the fact that Pecco Bagnaia did and the impact on the championship that's going to have, as well as that sprint race. The return of Jackass, Jack Miller in the top five. That's fun. Yamaha may be in a problem on a Honda, and Yamaha in general, and how they might be in some trouble. All of that.
Might be. More,
well, I'm being nice about it, to say the least. Places you can find us in the meantime, we're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Instagram at motorsport101pod. You can get some exclusive highlights of the show and maybe even some sneak peeks before they actually go live on there as well. And you even get to have even more of me rambling about extra motorsport related things as well. You can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our audio episodes and some bonus stuff every once in a while as well. We can upgrade to the $10 tier so you can get supporters club access to our Discord server, and you're able to listen to these episodes live as they are being recorded, as Ghost Raptor and Jason are right now. Thank you very much for listening in as ever. We are also on Twitter at motorsport_101, and if you want to follow us all personally on Blue Sky, you can. I'm at Dre Harrison. RJ O'Connell is at RJ O'Connell, as the name would suggest, and Cameron is at CBuckley917. Look out for Doom Slayer and Man Generally Too Angry to Die. It's a good spot for him. All those details and more on our website, motorsport101.com. So that was a nice little roundup there. After this, let's get into MotoGP's 2025 Grand Prix of the Americas.
When I saw that Maverick Viñales was just standing out here without his bike, I knew shit was going to be weird, Dre.
Yeah, that kind of was the sign, wasn't it? That something has gone very wrong here, and we need someone, we need an adult in the room to restore order. Okay, this is going to need some exposition. So bear with me for 2 minutes here of your precious time. Well, if you didn't see the MotoGP race this past weekend, we can explain what happened. Now, Austin, This past weekend had a lot of talk about mixed conditions, variable weather, and it was all weekend. Friday was a complete washout, pretty much wet running the whole way through. Saturday ended up being largely dry, but on Sunday the rain came down early in the morning. The Moto3 race ended up dry. Congrats to Jose Antonio Rueda for winning that one, his second win of the year. Congratulations to Jake Dixon in Moto2, who completely dominated a wet Moto2 race, because the rain came down shortly before that race started. There was already its own separate debate about whether dries or slicks or wets were the tire of choice in that race. Turns out the wet tire one has run, because the track didn't dry fast enough for the slicks to really come into play until the very, very end of the race. Funnily enough, Diogo Moreira, who was the best finisher of those on the slicks at the fastest lap of the race, on the final lap. So, track's drying out. It stopped raining. Mm-hmm. About half an hour before the race starts, Fabio Quartararo crashes on the sighting lap, because he was on slicks on his way to the grid. The track was still too wet in Sector 1 to run said slicks. So he goes down. The bike is fine. Well, the bike isn't fine. They have to swap bikes for the second bike once he's on the grid after the sighting lap starts. It dries very quickly in Texas, because the sun was still out, still 23 degrees in the air, so good weather. So the track was drying out very quickly. On the way to the grid, the track was still wet. But by the time the green was about to go, there's a dry line coming through on the circuit. So there was, again, another gamble debate in the air. Do you want to start this race on wet tires or slick? The majority of the grid are on wet tires on the grid. We see the guys getting ready for the warm-up lap. We're in the middle of the light box. And in fact, if you were watching this broadcast live, you could see Marc Marquez run away from his bike right as the light box intro for the broadcast is starting. And then they cut said broadcast when they see Marc Marquez running down the pit lane, trying to head back to his garage to change bikes. They had to cut the intro so they could show the live ongoing footage of the chaos that had now gone on, because Marquez is at the front and he's gone into the pit lane. He started running, and then other people start following him. Pecco Bagnaia, who's on row two in sixth place, he follows Mark in, as does Maverick Viñales on the KTM, but he gets lost on the way back and he's now on the grid without a bike. Multiple bikes are being shuffled to the back. Everybody's panicking. Mike Webb throws the red flag. The start is aborted. Then they do a quick start procedure to compensate for that. And by that point, everybody's on dry tires and it's a fully dry race start. We'll talk a little bit more about the race itself in a minute. But gentlemen, what did you make of that carnage at the start? Genius, insanity. How do you guys want to describe it?
My takeaway, what little I've seen of this race, full disclosure, was that if it's got people mad that MotoGP supposedly lets Mark Marquez get away with any because he's their golden boy, it must have been a little bit genius. I can't lie.
This guy, genius and insanity in equal parts. I can't get over the visual of Mark just head in the air, kind of stretching Nam out, and bolts full speed back to the pit lane on foot.
It was a great throwback to these infamous qualifying lap in 2015, a whole 10 years ago to the weekend, where his bike died in 3 minutes to go in qualifying, and he has to jump over the wall and run back through the pit lane to get his second bike in time so he can get one last cracker, a qualifying lap in. Incredible scenes. But I'm going to give Dorna some credit here. They gave a fantastic video. If you have not seen it, I do highly recommend it. A brilliant video of the on-grid conversation with a hot mic between Marc Marquez and Marco Rigamonti, his chief mechanic, discussing the plan. Because here's the thing. Marc planned this. He planned all of this. This was completely intentional. He knew on the grid that the track was going to dry out and it was going to be a slick start. He clearly wanted to catch the field unaware and trap some people on the wet tire. So he's discussing with Rigamonti, get the second bike ready in pit lane. And then at the last minute, I'll tell you whether we're going to do the plan or not. And then, of course, we then see him leg it seconds before the warm-up lap was due to start. And that's what sets off all this chaos. Mark's logic was, well, if we don't take the start, we start from the back of the grid if we don't be on the grid for the warm-up lap. So if everybody's going to be stuck on wets and they're going to need a bike change, we'll overtake them in the pits anyway, because a bike change in MotoGP is about 35, 40 seconds once you factor in pit entry, pit exit time, all of that. Mark will pass them easily. And he reckons anyone else that was on slicks, well, they'll just outrace them anyway. That was Mark's plan. Just one problem with that. Mark didn't factor in the fact that the rules had changed. Like, the rule on this had changed after the 2024 Japanese Grand Prix last year, when that was its own separate carnage in terms of bike changes and tire change at the start of the race. The rule now is, when the three-minute board goes up before the race starts, you are no longer allowed to change tyres. That's the rule. If you break that rule, you are now given a ride-through penalty, which is a significant bigger punishment. I mean, again, a ride-through, I think they worked out on the broadcast, was about 27 seconds, something like that, 27, 28 seconds, roughly. It depends on
the difference between like winning the race and fighting for low end points.
Yeah, it's in MotoGP, that's normally at least the entire points. It's a very long pit lane at COTA, by the way, so probably around 30 seconds. So Mark's plan would have backfired if it had fully come to pass. But there was also, but because Mark was thinking of basically plan C. And plan C was, there's another rule in the book, article, I think it's 1.18.3 or something like that. The rule reads that if more than 10 bikes abandon their grid slots, the start is automatically aborted. Red flag, start is aborted, none of this matters. It basically cancels everything out. And this is why Marc Marquez was not given said ride-through penalty. Because of the unique circumstance of Wave's hands, this shit, etc.
Yeah, you could say genius which succeeds is genius, and genius which does not succeed is madness.
Exactly. Because Mike Webber never seen this shit before, understandably, for safety reasons, he aborted the start with the red flag, which means none of this counted. It's as if this start didn't exist. So Mark technically did nothing wrong, and therefore he was allowed to take his place on pole position for the restart as if nothing had happened. This goes up to quite right. He says, Webb in the video explains, quote, unprecedented circumstances, which, yeah, I think that's fair to say.
that kind of says it, doesn't it? Yeah, what a mess. We got some good gifts out of it.
Oh, yeah, the content was superb.
The content was superb. How do they come up with this crap? How do they come up with this crap in the garage before a race?
And
you would have thought, like, if you planned all the way around this, that you would have reread the rule book and realized, oh, this isn't going to work out. But no, they just decided to wing it.
And I still don't think it would have worked because running the math on this, Enea Bastianini was one of three riders who did originally start the grid on the slick tire. They were the two of the KTMs, Enea Bastianini and the Lord himself, Brad Binder. The other one was Iagura. They were the only three riders on the grid that had slicks. So the thing with that is that Bastianini only finished 12 seconds off the winning bike by the time it was all said and done. I don't think Mark wins that race if this plan comes through. I don't think he'd be so much quicker than Bastianini that he wins the race, given he'd have to make up 30 seconds in the pits. Given that Bastianini will be able to just ride his normal race trim because it was a dry track by the time the race had actually started. So, yeah, if anything,
probably not running him down.
No, I think Mark finishes probably fourth at best. He's probably still ahead of any of his other rivals if they started the race on the wet tire. But does he win the race? Probably not. So, in my humble opinion, I think Mark was probably a bit too clever for his own good on this one. He clearly wanted to try and catch the field napping without realizing one thing. Motherfucker, you're Mark Marquez. If you do some batshit, people are going to copy you. You've won here seven times. You've got eight pole positions here. If people know you're basically invincible at COTA, they're going to copy you.
Well, and he knows that everyone can see that because he's on pole position.
The whole grid can see him. The whole grid can see him. They know exactly what he's about to do. So the moment he bolts, people are going to react to that. Like, it's... Don't get me wrong. A part of me respects Mark's level of insanity that he actually knew to a degree what the rulebook looked like and thought he could game the system a little bit. If anything, you probably just overthought it. Dude, just put slicks on the bike.
You got too cute. Even before all of this got struck off.
Yeah. Just run the slicks. If you think it's a dry track, which he clearly did think it was dry enough for slicks, you're the best changeable conditions rider that's ever existed. Why are we overthinking this? Just put the fucking slicks on.
Yeah, pretty much.
Every advantage you can gain, I suppose.
Well, there's gaining an advantage, and then there's jumping the shark, and that ultimately is what it would have turned into had it not been struck off from the result, and basically not mattering.
You're arguing with Davide Tardozzi on the sidelines while the anthem is being played, as Raptor quite rightly points out, and Tardozzi was right. You can hear him in the video. You can hear him say, it's not back of the grid, it's a ride-through now. Tardozzi was right all along, but of course he backs down to his rider, which is what most team bosses would do in a heat-of-the-moment situation, and backs down. But Tardozzi should have been the one to put his foot down and say, no, we are not doing this. Put the slicks on the bike. Even if it means taking a ride-through penalty, the slicks still would have been the better play, assuming the start runs normally. Mm-hmm. So, it's a very fine line between genius and insanity, and Mark was in many ways this weekend on the wrong side of that line. And yeah, it made for fantastic entertainment, though.
Yeah, keep in mind, we've had this much of a discussion. We haven't even gotten off the starting grid yet.
No. Right.
Because we all thought, well, you thought it would be different this time. Holy shit, it really was different this time.
Yep. Mark Marquez takes off from pole position, pulls away, sets multiple lap records in a row, and then...
crashes with a 2-second lead in the S's.
Droppity, droppity, drop. And I'll talk about the mistake for just a minute. I mean, he just took way too much curb on the inside of one of the S's. And there was no saving it. Mark, our bikes! You've ruined our bikes for 1 week.
Like I said before, very fine line between genius and insanity. And that was the wrong side of the line.
See, he went over that line by about 3 inches.
3 inches too many.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. He did not need to take the liberties he was taking. I don't even know how much he was pushing, but he was comfortably faster than Bagnaia at that point in the race.
It was such a big misjudgment of the corner that I wonder if it was just a genuine lapse in concentration. Because it wasn't that he was riding too hard, it's that he got the corner completely wrong.
Yeah.
He took the wrong angle in. He was inches further over the curb than he was the previous 2 or 3 laps, and it dumped the bike down. And unfortunately, when it dumped the bike down, it ripped the right rear set off the bike. So his foot peg was gone. He had to put his foot on the exhaust, which I can tell you from experience, not comfortable on a motorcycle.
No, bit hot. Bit hot. You don't want that. Levers can only hold that off for so long. pardon me. You're right, Cam. I think it felt more like a lapse in concentration than anything else, which, again, he was going 2/10 a lap quicker than Pecco the whole first phase of that race. He did not need to ride at 100% to do what he was doing. Like, Pecco, and we'll get to Pecco, and of course it's a great win for him, you know, a very important win for him as well. Mm-hmm. But Mark had this race won. He already had done the hard bit. He'd broken away from the leading group.
He broke away on lap one. He had a second lead at the end of the first lap.
Yeah, he took the risk. That's the genius of Marquez. He went a second faster on the opening lap than anybody else did because he, again, is the master of changeable conditions. He was able to take liberties that the other riders on the grid were not prepared to take, rips off this huge hole shot lead, is quicker than man in the eye by the time he gets past Alex Marquez. He's got 2/10 on him, a lap, comfortably. He's got a 2-second-plus lead. And then he completely gets his entry wrong, overcompensates, takes too much curb, and bins it. We forget that Marc Marquez is the originator of what I like to call original sin with the Bozo gene, because we all know that for all his genius, Marc can still fuck up. He fucks up more than the average rider does, because he often is able to go so far above what we consider the limits of what a bike can do. It's the double-edged sword of what makes Mark so great, but also often so frustrated.
And we saw the other side of it the previous day in the sprint, where the man is halfway up a high side, going through the long Sector 3 corner, and then he's leading the race 2 corners later, because he lunges it up the inside of Pecco and Alex.
Yeah. Again, he is the Ronnie O'Sullivan of MotoGP. It's such a fine line between being the greatest thing since sliced bread and then going over the top and having a meltdown. And it's cost him dearly. This was a 30-point swing to Pecco Bagnaia right here and now. You've done the hard work so far. You've won everything you can win. You've topped almost every major session we've had all season. And you've only got an 11-point advantage on Bagnaia for it because you have a DNF to your name, and Pecco has not finished a race or a sprint lower than fourth this year. You're not being rewarded for working this hard if you're going to just dump the bike in a random... And what's worse is this was a banker round for Marquez. This was the banker round. Arguably his best track between that and the Saxon Ring. There's been few more guaranteed nailed-on wins in MotoGP than Marco Cota. And you've instead given Bagnaia a 30-point advantage. Not ideal.
No. But he also did. This also happened in 2019, and then it literally did not matter.
That's what we just don't know, really. That's the big question mark. Because, I mean, we've got to give Pecco his due. You know, we took advantage of that. I mean, Pecco really has not really done an awful lot wrong at all this season.
Problem is that he's not as fast as Mark. People were ready to call him the two-wheeled Checo.
Well, I thought it was unbelievable. Like, and so disrespectful. Like, really? We're calling him this after two MotoGP races where Mark, we already know, is a phenom? You're not quite the phenom. Oh, no, you're basically Checo now. Okay.
Well, the problem is less that and more. This, up to this point, irrespective, was still his best start to a MotoGP season ever.
Because he's not made mistakes. He's just ridden to his capabilities.
But he's also been clapped five races in a row up to this point.
Yeah.
By not insignificant margins.
But how did Jorge Martín win the world title last year?
Having 10% less bozo than the other guy.
That might be what it ends up boiling down to, Cam. We literally saw it last year.
I don't know. If Mark is winning every race and then crashing every fifth, it will work out in his favor. To that effect, Alex Marquez finished second again. Just to a different factory Ducati. So he's finished second every points paying session and now leads the championship by 1 point.
It's kind of wild. I mean, I love that Grassini's locker room after the race played Follow the Leader as a song in the garage, because for the first time ever, they have a bike leading the MotoGP World Championship. A salute to Nadia Padovani, who has taken Fausto Grassini's legacy and turned that team into genuine winners. And they're like, did you ever imagine half a decade ago they'd have a rider leading the world championship? A Marquez brother, and not the one you're thinking of either. I mean, it's a testament to how far they've come as a team and how far Alex Marquez has come along as a rider that this is no longer a surprise. He's just been the consistent number two guy all year long so far, and he's been rewarded for it. He's a genuine title threat at the moment. We can't say otherwise. If he keeps racking up these points, he's going to make it difficult for everybody else.
Yeah. Also, not the first time they led. Remember, Bastianini led into 22.
Ah, yes, because they won the opening round. Quite right.
Yeah. Feels like a really long time ago, considering how that career trajectory has gone.
Five years ago, Grassini was the Aprilia factory team that nobody wanted to ride for, and the Marquez brothers were both at Repsol Honda. All of that feels like a long time ago.
I mean, memory serves. I think it was Stefan Bradl and Alvaro Bautista riding for him at that point.
Bradl was already at Honda. Best guy.
I've got Bradley Smith and Aleix Espargaró running.
Okay. The dying embers of the last Brit in MotoGP, Bradley Smith. And I think they'd already ran through Sam Lowe's the year prior as well.
There's still a possibility that Jake Dixon could get up the grid. You just gotta believe.
Ah, yes. TNT's new hire, RJ O'Connell.
Yes. You can't see it, but my man is dousing himself in glaze as we speak. There's just more glaze than a Krispy Kreme donut stand right now. Just drench him in glaze. It's going to look like a weird sexual accident on the end of this podcast.
But back to that. Like, the thing is, Pecco is not even the threat right now. It's Alex Marquez, because he just has been following the home second every single run. He's qualifying on the front row every single round. If he just keeps going as he's going, it's going to be very difficult to maintain against that unless you are winning every single round, which up to this point, Mark did.
And that's just the point. Mark can win however many he likes. If Alex is finishing second, the maximum he could take out of Alex at a race weekend is 8 points. And that's not a huge amount. It's very reminiscent of Alvaro Bautista's first big year in World Superbikes when he won the first 11 races or something like that. But like And when his season collapsed in the back half, it like Jonathan Rea ran him down so quickly because Jonathan was finishing second in every single race that Bautista was winning. So Bautista was working all that effort to win all these races and be bulletproof while only taking 5 points a race out of Jonathan Rea. You know, it was the minimum possible gain you could take from winning.
I severely doubt Mark is going to spend the entire second half of this year throwing the bike up the road, though.
Probably not. I mean, we've talked about it before many a time on the show. Qatar is next weekend. I'd argue two of Bagnaia's three best races are up next. Qatar and Jerez. Qatar, he's won multiple times before. Jerez, he's won the last three in a row. That, for me, is going to be the big litmus test. Because even Bagnaia admitted after the race he got lucky on this one, and he knows he got lucky. He knew that Marquez was the faster man all weekend, and he just took advantage of a mistake to win that race.
He did make his opportunity by getting past Alex on track.
Absolutely.
He just wouldn't have known that, like, that would have been the pass for the win at the time that he...
Yeah, because it was Mark with a huge gulf in pace to Pecco with a gulf in pace to everyone else.
Yeah, we just didn't know at the time. It was a big old lunge at the bottom of turn 11 and the bottom of the hill to make that lunge. I mean, yeah, Pecco, we all know it. He's stupidly good on the brakes. And yeah, got it spot on to pass Alex Marquez there and hold on to it. And that ended up being the race winning pass, not that we knew it at the time. But yeah. I mean, the scoreboard says Alex Marquez by one over his brother, Pecco Bagnaia, 11 points back, and the ball's in his court for the next two rounds. If Bagnaia can win at Qatar, game on, quite frankly. If he doesn't, and Mark's able to outclass him, because Mark is not a big Qatar guy. He's always said he's never been a fan of Qatar as a track, but he has won there a fair amount of times. So it's going to be a fascinating weekend.
Well, 2014, it's been a hot minute. But, I mean, you look back to 2019, and the sign of what was to come is that on the worst Honda track you could imagine, and a track Mark doesn't like very much, he was second by half a fairing.
Yeah, beaten by Dovi by a nose. Yeah, another classic Dovi-Marquez matchup that Dovi won after a Marquez lunge at the final corner went wrong. Stop us if you've heard that one before.
He made up for it the rest of that year.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about that. But, it's a fascinating situation. I think we're going to know a lot more about the state of the MotoGP field at the front of the Ducatis. Maybe not so much after Qatar, certainly after Jerez. Because those are two big Bagnaia rounds. And, yeah, we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Big championship implications on that one. Let's do a little bit of cleanup on the rest of the weekend. First of all, RJ, Jackass is back. Not the movie this time.
No, right? Jack Miller got a top five finish, and that feeds me into another point that's on our board of miscellaneous items. Does the Yamaha factory team just not know how to run their own bikes anymore?
It is a little bit concerning. Now, Pramac are the defending riders champions.
Yeah. They ain't scrubs.
They know how to run bikes. They know how to get the best out of bikes, sometimes better than their own factory compatriots. We saw that last year with Ducati. However, when you consider the amount of quality in the Yamaha garage, for them to be this bad, while Jack Miller, who we all universally considered cooked to well done, cooked to congratulations.
Hamstring falling off the bone.
We considered it.
Yes, sir.
We considered his acquisition of Pramac to be a DEI hire for native English speakers.
Oh, my Lord.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, yeah, I'm not off of how down we were on Jack Miller going into this offseason. My God.
And we were. For him to be clowning on the Yamaha factory team, that is very concerning. Fabio Quartararo, that poor man. He picked the bag, and he has been punished universally ever since.
In this particular instance, he could only manage 10th in the race. I mean, you saw in the sprint how hard he was having to work to stay with the VR46 team, and trying to fight them. It was a great fight during the sprint, but Quartararo was overriding the Yamaha so much just to stay with them. And then in the race itself, remember how I mentioned that his main bike got wrecked on the sighting lap? They had to change to the rear bike. The second bike had electronics problems, including a computer that was telling him that he was going to run out of fuel in the race when he actually had a full tank. Fabio was having to manually adjust the mapping on his engine to make sure that, basically tried to tell the computer, no, there's fuel in this thing, I promise you. So it was a hot mess. That was not an optimal Yamaha run, but even so, he still beat Rins. Which kind of says it all, really.
Rins, who won this race 2 years ago before the Honda took its pound of flesh. This is Yamaha, who were once upon a time alongside Honda, the master of all things electronic. And they can't put together two working bikes. That's real bad.
We were talking off the back of preseason testing how this was a team that might get out of tier D of concessions if they were able to get into the top six every weekend. And we thought there was a genuine chance they might, given how well their preseason test had gone. And they're the worst bucking MotoGP right now, in my opinion.
I don't think there's much of an opinion on that. They were getting destroyed on the straights even before. Even without the electronic issue on Fabio's bike.
It's the quote from Quartararo after the race.
I might have missed this.
Didn't he have like an absolute zinger?
Let me locate the zinger.
We'll cut.
I know it wasn't great. My favorite one person was Fabio Di Giantonio saying, quote, "I'm tired as fuck. I need 100 beers."
Real. He is real. So real for that.
I love that boy. Third place, by the way, for him. First Grand Prix podium in a hot minute. I love that.
I was thinking of what Yoann Mir said. If I said everything I feel today, it would be bad for my image. Should we also talk about...
Is it as bad for his image as his riding lately?
Yeah. You asked a question here, Dre. As what point are the crashes of Yoann Mir a problem? Or Pedro Acosta?
Pedro Acosta is always going to get the benefit of the doubt because KTM are mid, and we can all see that Acosta is having to go over the limit to try and salvage that thing. Yoann Mir has been a ball of frustration for the last year and change. I did the numbers on this. Yoann Mir has now failed to finish in 5 of his last 7 Grand Prix and 12 out of his last 23, going back to the start of last season.
What was his hallmark of his championship-winning season?
Consistency, smoothness, not making mistakes.
Where did that guy go?
Into the emissions scandal with Suzuki. I'm out of patience with Yoann Mir. The man I once called the truth on this podcast has begun lying and has been lying for some time. The Honda is not great. Like, they are having to ride the shit out of it to get what they are getting, but it is now certified mid. I would have ripped your arm off for that a year ago. A year ago, that thing was a genuine death trap. But he doesn't have the excuse anymore of what he's doing and how things are going to be crashing this much. It's 12 in the last 20. It's 5 in the last 7 Grand Prix. And when Luca Marini is getting the bikes home in the top 10, when Johan Zarco was fighting for legitimate top 6
again
for his own crash,
was in fifth when he crashed.
It's just it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable from a world champion, from someone who we know built his career on the back of consistency.
The only thing that's saving me right now from further criticism is the fact that Honda are probably just happy he's crashing from 7th rather than 17th, quite frankly.
This is a win for us.
Yeah, so I think that attitude is what's going to likely supersede any concerns about Mir's raceability at the moment, rightly or wrongly. But at what point did they run out of patience? Because these your big money factory hire, former world champion on your bike. You signed up to a big extension pretty early in silly season last year for two more years of this. And this is not acceptable.
So when Repsol Honda, there's a memory. The good old days until recently. When the factory Honda team should probably be another 15, 20 points on up from where they are now. It's not good enough.
Yeah. And again, Honda are probably thanking their lucky stars at the moment that they've got a package that is now comfortably in the top 10. I mean, they're getting multiple bikes in the top 10 every weekend now.
Like, they are the second best bike two weekends in a row. They've been the second best bike on average on speed.
Yeah, I mean, look, not so much this weekend, because Marco Bezzecchi was in sick and he was very good late on, as was Enea Bastianini. But they are in the mix with KTM, with Aprilia, and on the lower end of Ducati on a bad day, i.e. Fermín Aldeguer, who was running top six himself before he crashed at the end of that race. So this is a Honda that can comfortably get into the top eight now. This is
something you can go and fight with.
Yeah, it's a good platform to build on, certainly. At the worst, on a good day, you're the second best bike in the field. Excellent. From where you were a year ago, that's a walking miracle that you're here right now. Doesn't mean shit if you're not bringing the bike home. You've got to bring the bike home. And Mir has got to learn a bit of self-preservation, because either he's going to get dinged up and injured, because that's what happened to him last year, where the racked up injuries because of the amount of crashes he had, or people are just going to get fed up of believing in him, because it's just going to say, oh, look there. I saw Simon Patterson on Twitter just say, Mir, rider okay, when he crashed, because it's become a running joke that he's going to crash it in a race now. Like, it's not good. It's not good. At least with Pedro Acosta, you can see he's fighting for every result he can get, because we know he's Pedro Acosta.
And even then, Pedro's been dumping the bike a lot this year, and that is going to start adding up on his body as well.
He got hurt last year doing the exact same thing. He missed time after Phillip Island last year because he injured his shoulder. Like, it's like, there's only one way this tends to go, and it goes south very quickly. So these guys just got to be very, very careful, because this is a sport where you get hurt very quickly, and it can just take rounds off you, end campaigns, end seasons. Look at Jorge Martin. He's probably going to be back in Qatar, but he's coming back knowing he probably has got no chance at the title already.
Probably.
And that sucks.
He's 87 points down.
Yeah, good luck with that.
And it could have easily been 114 if it wasn't for Marquez not finishing at COTA. If he does that, he's got 111 points. He's perfect through three rounds.
Yeah. I mean, even beyond that, Aprilia are very up and down as well. I mean, Bezzecchi looked like he was having the worst weekend of his career up until the point where he put it sixth in the Grand Prix. Everything that could go wrong just about did. And then he brought it home just fine.
Yep. Sometimes it be like that. That'll just about do it for this episode of Motorsport 101. We're just about done here. We'll be back for MotoGP in just about a week and a half's time from Qatar and the Sile International Circuit. Big, big round coming up. One of Bagnaia's best. Is this going to be the round where we truly see him take the fight to Marc Marquez? We will have to wait and see. We'll be back next week for a review of Formula One and the Japanese Grand Prix. Apparently some Japanese guys in a Red Bull Nana, that could go over quite well. It'll be quite popular. We'll have to wait and see. But keep your eyes peeled for that one. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley. And we'll catch you guys next week. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
and demand the return of our bikes.
Our bikes will return at a date to be determined later, likely in Qatar.